Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
1 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Don't forget to check out our lunch partner on Wednesdays, our friends over at Jefferson's, locations in Lenexa, North KC, Lawrence, Topeka, and Joplin. It's football season, and there's no better place to watch your favorite team than at Jefferson's. Great daily specials, awesome happy hours. Bring your friends and family out to any of the Jefferson's locations for the ultimate game day experience. Jefferson's wings, burgers, oysters. Let's go out to the phone and welcome in Josh Klingler, of course, silent reporter for the Chiefs radio network. You heard him Sunday night from the Meadowlands. You'll hear him this Sunday afternoon from Arrowhead as the Chiefs take on the Ravens. And Kling, going back a little bit to Sunday night, at least, I'm just curious, what was the mentality on the sideline and just the entire vibe in the first half, based off how ugly that was for those of us that were listening or watching on TV?
Well, I mean, you can continue to see like a more frustrated bunch than we're used to seeing. Their bar's really high, and so I guess I get it, because we're all doing the same thing. Like, what's going on? You know, so how would that they not be in that kind of situation as well? So yeah, I think it's been a little tighter than you know recent years. We were commenting that on the pregame show the other day that I just said, you know, they were going for three in a row last year and didn't feel like it was as tight as it was for the first two games, and certainly through the first half. Now, I think everybody exhaled a little bit on the first drive of the second half, where you thought, okay, here you go. So the second half was much better. You know, the locker room afterwards, I don't know if they were completely satisfied, but I think everybody was just like, just get a win, right? I think they probably all wanted it to be a little bit prettier, but I think you got to be in the camp of a win's a win, get back to that, and now face a massive game coming up on Sunday.
We can talk about Worthy here in a minute and his importance to the possibility of that win on Sunday, but Andy Reid today was asked about Juwan Taylor and essentially said when he's not committing penalty, he's great. So, you know, maybe one of the best pass blockers in the league, I think is the way he put it, when he's doing this. At what point is the loyalty part a fault, or am I just supposed to assume they don't think Jalen Moore can play right tackle?
I kind of hearken this a little bit back to channeling a little bit of Ned Yost via Bobby Cox, where it was, if you think you're going to make a decision, you know, wait a week, you know, kind of that okay. Really temper. I feel like Andy Reid kind of has a lot of that in him in a football sense. Now, I don't know what the timetable is, you know, if it's wait a week in baseball, is it different in football? But I think we've seen it before, allowing people to kind of work through, especially veterans, to work through any kind of struggles and not have any type of quick hook or hook, however speed you want to have at it. But no, it seems like he's just going to get every opportunity as long as he's blocking to their satisfaction to get the full leash. I think a lot of people would like to see different, right, from a fan standpoint, like just something different and try it out. But they're the ones in it day to day that are watching what's going on. You got to think that if one was better than the other, contract or no contract, that they would make that move. So I still think they probably believe that Juwan Taylor is the better option at right tackle right now. And I think they'll continue to go in that direction. Kind of same with like Harrison Butker's struggles, right? I think he's going to be allowed to work his way through those types of things versus, oh, we better go grab somebody or bring in some competition and see where it goes. I think that they have a pretty long leash when it comes to self-correction.
Two of the last 3 years that he's really struggled, Harrison Butker's numbers were down, Kling. He was hurt. He missed three games in each of those games. Do you think he's hurt now?
I don't think so. I feel like it's just kind of, you know, the old golf cliche, right? I mean, it's just he needs to be at the driving range and try to work some things out, because it was, you know, doink to the left, misses to the right. It's not been, I know we'd kind of discussed that kind of off the air amongst us as well after the game. It's kind of like the misses aren't from the same spot. If it's like one spot, you're like, okay, he's pulling the ball one direction. Well, now he seems to, is there overcorrection going on? Look, that group is always practicing, I think more so than any other team. I kind of watch other sidelines, and like they're practicing a lot, the specialists during a game on the sidelines. And so they're always kind of tinkering. So I got to imagine he's kind of in the lab, probably with Dave Tobe, and trying to work through it. But I got to imagine that, again, that's going to be kind of a long leash, and you know, he'll be better later on than he might be right now.
We're talking to Josh Klingler. He, of course, is part of the Chiefs radio network. You'll hear him, Mitch, and Dana this Sunday afternoon right here on 96.5 The Fan. On the defensive side, this is now eight quarters in a row, Kling, where defense has looked really good. Spags yet again making these adjustments, even if they're not getting consistent pressure without blitzing. It feels like this defense came around a lot quicker than people thought after what we saw week one. Do you feel like the defense has now showed you enough to where they're going to make sure this team's in every single game because of the system that Spags has implemented?
And it's been kind of game to game, right? So the Eagles game plan completely different than what the, you know, the Giants would have been. But, you know, you pretty much keep the quarterback in check against Philadelphia. Saquon Barkley is not the story. And then the Giants game, obviously you had two wide receivers that had monster numbers the week before, and you basically bageled Malik Nabers, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe Russell Wilson had a hand in that, but I like to think that the Chiefs defense did as well, kind of taking him out of the mix. And so really kind of game to game, and how you've made adjustments and how you've gotten the primary weapons shut down by the opposition has been very, very impressive. Yes, you still love to see them get after the quarterback a little bit more, but I think pretty satisfying defensive performance the last 2 weeks, and it's going to have to be again. I think if there's anything you could take from that Lions game, you know, in defending Lamar Jackson, it looks like to me that your defensive line is going to have to be relentless. And I think at times this Chiefs defensive line isn't necessarily their strength to continue to keep after things. I think they're going to have to go an extra second or two to try to get after Lamar Jackson and then try to keep him in a box, that if he's got, you know, not a lot of avenues to squirt out, and you're covering down the field, that's when he was in trouble the other night. Held on to the ball an awfully long time, and they kept him bottled up, and that's how the Lions had a ton of success against Lamar Jackson. So if they can run that similar type blueprint, they're going to have some success.
We'll wait for the injury report later today, Kling. Do you think the Chiefs need Xavier Worthy to play to win this Sunday?
You know, I do. I think they do miss he and Rice tremendously. Now, you saw a little bit last week. I was kind of curious, like the jet sweep game was kind of gone without Xavier Worthy. And they did try it last week with both Breshard Smith and with Nico Romero.
I thought it looked okay with Smith, for what it's worth. Yeah, I thought it maybe worked.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they threw a little bit more on his plate last week. But those feels like there's, you know, there's Xavier Worthy type of things that no one else really runs. And so, you know, you don't want that thing re-injured. You know, the worst case scenario to me with Xavier Worthy, guys, is you have some kind of brace. You said he didn't need surgery. He comes out, he gets hit or falls, and now he does need surgery. Mm-hmm. And then that's a longer process. So I got to imagine that's a little bit of the fear. You want to make sure he's fully healthy, but they did give him not only a full week, but like a no travel, you're not going week, you know, which was kind of a surprise. So you're like, okay, just you stay back, you rehab, you get healthy and give it a go, you know, this week. So pretty optimistic that, you know, you're going to see him continue to do that, but I just don't think you're going to know anything until you get hit. And, you know, you're not going to hit him in practice just to see, hey, is that thing in the same place? So it's going to have to be in a game at some point.
How do you feel about the AFC West right now, where the Chargers have three division wins and they're 3-0?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough based on the schedule. You know, I still think the Chiefs are going to be able to reel things in, and it's going to be a close race throughout. So, but you know, credit to them, their schedule was kind of tough in that way, because you don't want to give away division games, and they're able to kind of find their way through and get those wins. Are they the best team? I don't know. Herbert has played awfully well here to start. I don't mind them also being the front runner and the darling. Like, fine. And then kind of we'll see if the Chiefs can reel them in with a long winning streak. I still feel like this Chiefs team will kind of figure things out, get better along the way. And even if they're kind of, you know, in that, you know, if they can win this week and get to 500, they're in that 500 through like six games. You just feel like there's going to be like another classic Chiefs win streak, and then everybody will be looking at them in the division again and saying, oh crap, they didn't go away. So I still think that's going to be similar MO than what we've seen in previous years.
Josh Klingler, we appreciate it, man. I was going to ask you, you were on the air when Mike Gundy had his famous I'm a man, I'm 40 rant, right? Wasn't that what you were doing on the air at the time? He obviously got fired yesterday, so we were reminiscing about that. Do you think Mike Gundy's rant, like 30 years from now, will still be considered a top five rant of all time in sports?
Yeah. I mean, how many times did you watch it yesterday? I mean, I had like there was like a 45 second clip that was going around. I'm like, no. I need the whole thing. I need him holding up the newspaper. I need him doing that whole bit. It's like, you know, 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it is. No, it's amazing. It's going to still go down as one of the all timers. You know, I think that the time was right. He wasn't going to go, clearly. Yeah. So those are hard moves to make because of someone that's kind of synonymous with your program. But I guess, losing to Tulsa at home, and there's a bunch of money in Tulsa. There's a bunch of boosters probably that were laughing about Tulsa beating Oklahoma State. So I think that money probably spoke at the end of things and made that timing. But no, in terms of all-time rants, that's, you know, you're talking about practice, not a game, you know, or I'm a man, I'm 40. Like, there's few of those that are like, those are pretty much Rushmore rants. The Lee Elia Cubs one is always one of my favorites. That's an oldie, but a goodie. But no, Gundy's right up there. That'll forever be the case. I had to look up. Did you guys look up yesterday too? Like, how old is he now?
He's 58, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
dating myself a little.
Yeah,
58. You're like, wow. Yeah, he's yeah.
I think what stands out, Kling, is
still going strong.
Every single group chat from every person I know as people turn 40, that's the thing everybody sends you.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Like, I turned 40 last year. Do you know how many people sent me that GIF? Yeah. Like, it's everybody. Everybody you
know. I will never not laugh at that entire rant. The I'm a man, I'm 40, and the tail end of it where he stomps off to is just so great.
Kling, we appreciate it, man.
See you guys.
There you go, Josh Klingler, Chiefs silent reporter for the Chiefs Radio Network. Yeah, he was definitely on the air when that happened. Just an all-timer. Someone says, did you play his beer rant? We did not play the beer rant, although that was another one. It's not as famous as the I'm a man, I'm 40, but quite the comment from Gundy about a year ago about Ollie Gordon, when Ollie Gordon, who's now the running back in Miami with the Dolphins, but when he was dealing with his drug driving stuff, and I don't know what Mike Gundy was thinking.
That was an out-of-pocket.
Defending
take.
The drunk driving was a weird stance. Weird stance.
That was odd.
Little who news. Does, who in, doesn't? It was just weird, yeah.
Little news in baseball. The Nationals, according to Jeff Passan, are finalizing a deal to name Paul Tabani their new head of baseball operations. The reason why this is a big deal is Tabani's only 35 years old. He was the assistant general manager for the Red Sox.
He's the man.
Widely
he's
regarded
35,
one of the young
man.
Executives in Major League Baseball. He is now the head of, could you imagine being the head of baseball operations at 35? Call it you right now. You're the head of an entire baseball team.
Perfect.
How's that sound?
Perfect. I mean, Sean McVay got hired to be the head coach with the Rams when he was, 34?
Yeah. It is kind of crazy, though.
Wasn't
when guys
it
like that get that job, you're like, whew.
And Sean McVay's worked out pretty well, I'd say. Sean McVay's only 39 now, so yeah, I think he was 30.
How old was Lane Kiffin when he started getting every job on the planet?
Oh, he was young, too.
Oh, McVay was hired at the age of 30?
Woo!
Was it
30 years old he was the head coach of the Rams?
Or just on staff, or was he head coach 2017, so let's back up.
What year was he born?
Yeah.
30 years old? That's impressive. How old was Lane Kiffin, Drew, when he got, what was the first big job he got?
Tennessee?
Was USC the first big job he got? What was the order? I don't remember the order of operations.
He's 50 now, Lane Kiffin.
I think he was at Tennessee first.
You know, his first head coaching gig was with the Raiders in 2007-08.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
Then he went to the...
He was 33 when he was hired at Tennessee.
To be the Raiders head coach? That was when he was hired at Tennessee. He was technically the Raiders head coach.
He was 31 first, right? Then, I guess, when he was the Raiders coach.
The youngest coach in college football currently is 34.
I'll give Lane Kiffin credit. At the time, he was pitching this wonderkin, and then he was like flaming out, and everything was kind of going weird and crazy.
Bad.
He is stabilized. A nice established college football head coach at a major program in the SEC.
Yeah,
some of these teams are probably on to something a little bit with Lane Kiffin. It's just like
he was
time and circumstances
stuff,
in place, and immaturity and all that stuff just didn't line up.
No, he's been a very, very good football coach.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a part where I was like, oh man, he's just going to flame out and be like, man, that guy was wild. It just couldn't keep his mouth shut kind of stuff. And he still has fun with it. Don't get me wrong.
Oh,
there was something this week. Did you see this week?
His daughter.
So they're playing LSU. Ole Miss is playing LSU. His daughter's dating a linebacker LSU. And there's a tweet that was sent out, and then Lane Kiffin commented on the tweet.
Said, take the over.
And he said, take the over.
Oh,
he said, I'm dropping points on my daughter's boyfriend this
that's
week.
Funny.
That's what we're doing.
That's funny. And then he should be like, you couldn't even recruit your daughter's boyfriend. That, make the jokes back. I like a little Punch and Judy. That stuff's funny. But it's just like the idea that there was definitely a time when you're like, oh, he's going to flame out. Like, he became the Raiders
the
head coach.
The time after Tennessee was, particularly bad.
Well, he was only the head coach of the Raiders for a little over a year. Then coach of Tennessee for a year. He got the USC job. He was gone in like 3 years. So, like, it seemed like his career was like, he was like the bright, up-and-coming, big name that everybody wanted. And then it seemed like he was going to be off
of planet Earth. And he went to FAU and figured it out.
Well, he did the couple of years under Nick Saban when he was just taking flamed out former coaches to be offensive coordinators.
Yeah, Sarkisian.
Sarkisian and him. Like, he ran through some guys and, like, to Saban's credit, restarted like multiple careers making them OCs during that time. It was crazy.
Up until he took the Georgia job, Kirby Smart was his DC for the longest period of time.
True. True.
Yeah, Nick, that also is part of Nick Saban's legacy.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Another reason why he's the GOAT.
I mean, he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. He's probably the greatest college coach of all time, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of the better football coaches of all time. It'll always be interesting that he tried the NFL. He's like, don't like it. I'll see you later. And the famous story that he tried to tell like one player what to do, and he's like, make millions of dollars. I don't care what you say, Nick. Like, good
he's
luck.
Like, oh, wait, I don't have any he's control. Like, this is not good.
And that's, probably why he left college football when he did. He could have kept coaching a couple more years. They would have been happy to keep him there. Hell, they'd love him back now. It's not like they've been like,
they also
Alabama's turning it around. They're fine.
I will still always have the big what if with
not
the Dolphins.
Not fine enough for Alabama fans.
The big what if with the Dolphins, though, because remember that he got
Cole
hired.
Pepper and Drew Brees.
The Dolphins were expecting, they were considering Drew Brees.
And I think he wanted Drew Brees.
Instead,
they traded
for Dante Culpepper. So what would have happened? Who knows, right? History would have been way different. Sean Payton obviously would not have had Drew Brees. What are we saying? Is Sean Payton still coaching?
Is Nick Saban still coaching in the NFL? Or does he coach the NFL the rest of the time?
There's obviously a trickle down effect, but that's the one is like, if the Dolphins would have signed Drew Brees, what happens for, does Drew Brees win a ring down in Miami?
It is crazy how there's not just NFL complications to that. There's also the college football complications.
What's Alabama?
How much different could both be?
Because before Saban took that job at Alabama, Alabama was in the pit of despair.
Yeah, they were going 6-6, 7-5 every year.
Yeah, and for them, that's like as bad as going
1-7, everything changed.
Yeah, pretty good program, that Alabama. That's why I was saying he's like, Alabama's going to be fine. I'm like, I'll just tell you right now, Alabama's not going to be happy with, we made the college football playoff and got knocked out in the first round.
In fairness, Saban made the playoff and got knocked out in the first round, too.
No,
you know,
but what's his name's not going to be there long the way
Kalen
things
DeBoer
are trending. Yeah.
They have one loss this year. If they beat Georgia this weekend, it doesn't matter. If they beat Georgia, they'll have lost to Florida State, who will be in the top five. It won't matter. It'll be fine. They'll be okay.
They were ready to panic after that week one. And he had a bad first year, obviously, so that's probably part of it. Good times, Someone said, and Saban is a part of Belichick's coaching tree. Look, that all goes back to like that initial coaching tree under Belichick and all those other guys, that era from the 70s and 80s that raised up a bunch of coaches. Bill Belichick, did you see the photo?
Of him on
him and Jordan?
What is it on some magazine?
Correctly pointed out, I believe, by Bomani Jones. This is a magazine cover on People. Is that what it was?
I don't know. I know it was a magazine cover.
Major magazine cover. And it's about like, hey, who really is Jordan?
U.S. Weekly.
U.S. Weekly.
Us Weekly.
So he...
Clearly, I don't read it. Yeah,
no, you're good.
In the photo, he has the rings, and he's wearing the NFL 100 jacket. And they're like, why is this... It's not about football. It's like, why did you... You could have worn anything. Why did you wear that?
Because he still clearly wants to be coaching in the NFL. He just only took.
He is hurt.
He only went to, obviously, because they wouldn't let him in. They wouldn't let him back in the club. That's all it was.
But that's sad. Yeah. That's sad behavior by him. He's lost it. Whatever magic touch he once had, that is long.
I can't remember. Real quick before we go to break, to timeline this, was the whole thing with. Didn't we think at one point, I think we talked about this, that was his girlfriend part of the reason why NFL teams were like, we're not going to deal with that distraction?
Wasn't that also part of it? I'm starting to think maybe. Did you see this past weekend? No.
There was a moment she was down on the, I think it was a little bit, it was a reach, but she was down on the field talking to him like before the game started, like right before the game started. Soon as he leaves out of the tunnel, he looks miserable because they lost again. They got smacked. And then the first person to greet him is Jordan right out of the tunnel, right away. Oh, yeah. It's
supporting.
It's so much of a. It's just a bigger story than what the team is. Almost nobody cares about how. Nobody cares about how UNC did this past weekend. It's Bill's on us weekly.
Which is when the
they got stomped this past weekend by UCF.
His entire coaching legacy is I wear cutoff shirts. I can't even be bothered to talk to you for 5 seconds because I'm a man about football. And the only thing I care about football, and I wake up and I think about football, and everything in my life is football. And it's like the opposite.
Yeah, he met Jordan. He's been blinded since. I mean, that's it.
Oh, man, I didn't realize how bad they got beat. They got beat 48.
That's what I'm saying. They got smacked at home.
Not great.
They've been smacked twice now.
Clemson's going to take it out. TCU and
probably.
Oh, yeah. Is that who they play this upcoming weekend?
Yeah.
Dabo's fed up, man. It's going to be bad. It should be.
Man, what a really tough one for me. I don't like seeing either of them succeed in college football. I guess I'll root for a tie.
Cody doesn't like Belichick or Dabo.
A lot of people don't like. A lot of people at this station Dabo, in particular don't like Dabo. I like Dabo.
You do?
I like Dabo a lot.
I can't understand it.
Why do you like Dabo?
He's bad for the sport.
No, I know. I think he's very good.
The sport you love.
I think he's very good. Good for the sport because he gives us a different side of things that not a lot of people agree with. That it's like, I'm not going to use the portal, and you know what? They can go ahead and fire me. I'm going to go win somewhere else. I think that's very. It's fun when coaches talk like that in college sports because you don't.
Hickory
hear
dickory
coaches.
Doc.
Yes,
the mouse ran up the clock.
I love
Coach Sweeney's got that drip, and now he's on TikTok.
Yeah. I love it. It might be cringe, but I think it is awesome because you know what? You get genuine answers. You get genuine care and genuine love in a variety of ways compared to NFL coaches on a regular basis.
He doesn't love kids.
I disagree with
that. He hates kids and the fact that they make money. Yes, it is.
Okay.
He openly said it. He said, I'm going to quit if they make money.
And he had a perspective change.
All right, up next, we will get to what's trending. And Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, joined us earlier today. We asked him about the Chiefs game against the Giants and also who he thinks is the best.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
3-0 team.
What's trending?
Number one on what's trending, the Royals were officially eliminated from the postseason last night. They obviously still have games against the Angels and the Athletics, including tonight out in LA, an 8:38 first pitch. It'll be Stephen Kolek on the bump for the Royals. Vern's on deck show at 7:30 right here on 96.5 The Fan.
Next up on what's trending, the Guardians beat the Tigers yesterday 5-2. Erasing a 15.5 game lead that the Tigers once possessed over Cleveland, 9.5 as of just 14 games ago. Guardians are now even with the Tigers in the division and only one game ahead in the final wild card spot standings. This would be obviously one of the biggest collapses in Major League Baseball history, whether they lose the division, especially if they also miss the playoffs in addition to it. But the Guardians have closed a 9.5 game, 15.5 game, depending on where you start the marker, game gap in the division to tie things up with the Tigers.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. I mean, last night was a playoff atmosphere. Each one of these games is going to be the way that way. And of course, the Guardians have all the momentum at this point in time. Elsewhere, what's trending, Terry McLaurin, wide receiver for the Commanders, is getting a second opinion today on a quad injury. His availability for Sunday is in question. There's a couple reports suggesting that he's not going to play on Sunday. They're trying to make sure it's not something more serious that's going to hold him out multiple weeks. But something to keep an eye on. Obviously, the Commanders wide receiver room outside of Terry McLaurin, pretty dicey. Debo Samuel, I don't even know if we count him as a wide receiver these days. He's kind of somebody that lines up in the backfield. He's a Swiss Army knife kind of player, but like a true number one or just a true wide receiver, they don't have much there in D.C., so it'd be a big loss if he misses some time.
Jaden Daniels was a limited participant in today's practice.
That too.
So we'll see whether or not he can get back on the field for the Commanders as well. Next up on Watch, trending surprise move out of Philadelphia. The Eagles have placed outside linebacker Nolan Smith on the injured reserve list, meaning he'll miss at least the next 4 weeks for the Eagles. There were no initial thoughts that it was that serious, but apparently was. By the time it was done, they're going to place him on the IR.
Lastly, on what's trending, the Pro Football Hall of Fame today announced 128 modern era players that are nominated for the 2026 class, headlined by Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, Larry Fitzgerald, Jason Witten, who are all eligible for the first time. Also,
in that list,
Alex Smith is eligible well. Running backs Frank Gore, LeSean McCoy, David DeCastro, Marquise Pouncey, Geno Atkins, just go on and on and on and on and on. It's a lot of players that get nominated. They continue to whittle this thing down. A third vote eventually will cut the list down to 15 players that get discussed at an annual selection meeting, which is right before the Super Bowl. And then the class of 2026 will have 3, 4, or 5 modern era players.
So who are the three? Drew Brees, Larry Fitzgerald. Who's the third?
I don't think first ballot, you're saying?
Yeah.
Because they said 3 to 5. I don't think it's going to be 5 based on the names.
Philip Rivers not a first ballot Hall of Famer, no, because there's a lot more debate to go there.
Who are the running backs?
Brees on Brees.
Here's the other running backs. Sean Alexander.
No.
Mike Allstott, Tiki Barber. Corey Dillon, Warwick Dunn.
Frank Gore's
Priest Holmes, not going to get in, but it's cool to see his name there. Wide receivers, Anquan Boldin. Interesting case for him. Donald Dry, Torrey Holt still hasn't got it. That might be the answer.
Give me someone on the used to be on deserves to be. Torrey Holt deserves to be a Hall of Famer more than anyone else you mentioned.
Vernon Davis, part of that. Linebackers, I'm trying to think of some other. AJ Hawk, I don't think so. Teddy Bruschi, Lance Briggs, Nafarro Bowman. Eric Berry, Cam Chancellor, Nick Collins, D'Angelo Hall, Rodney Harrison.
Man, Anquan Boldin, 13,779 career yards, 82 career touchdowns.
Bolden's an interesting case.
Where do you think Torrey Holt is on those numbers? Probably close, right?
Yeah, I think Torrey Holt will eventually get in. I don't know how many years he's been eligible now, though.
He's been eligible. It's been the last couple of years, I think, that people have been like, he's right on the fringe, but hasn't quite gotten in.
Torrey Holt finished with 13,382 and 74 touchdowns.
Very guys, close. We're missing an obvious name. Eli Manning, I think, gets in this year.
Oh, well. He's on the previous list.
Drew Brees and Eli.
I think Brees, Eli, and I think Larry Fitzgerald will be a first team.
Brees, Eli, Larry Fitzgerald. Too. There's a chance there's only three. Maybe those are the three.
Yeah. Doesn't feel like
and maybe one
bad.
Lineman.
Willie Anderson.
Yeah.
It's about time he needs to get in, man.
You know,
he
make it
due.
Happen. Uh-huh.
That feels like a local conversation, like we were fighting for Will Shields.
He revolutionized that left tackle position. He revolutionized the tackle position.
Let's start the campaign for Priest Holmes. Let's get him in. Let's get Priest him in.
I'd rather have Jamal Charles.
Well, so would I. We know that that's
Barry?
Not going to happen.
This is like the difference between lengths of service. There is, without question, in every single person who watched football regularly, mind Jamal Charles was 5 times the back that Frank Gore ever was.
Oh, yeah. He was so good.
I understand Frank Gore played in the NFL for a billion years longer, but there's no argument who the better running
Jamal
back
Jamal Charles was the number one running back in the league, I think, at times. Like, there was a case for him to be the best in football.
If he was in this era and played the same amount of years and everything, nobody would even be debating it.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that he was on bad teams. And
Terrell Davis and him have very close numbers. Terrell Davis won 2 Super Bowls.
That is what's trending here on Cody and Gold. Earlier today, our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, joined the show as he does each and every Wednesday. We started our conversation asking him about some of the 3-0 teams. Take the Eagles and Bills out of it. Between the 49ers, Chargers, Bucks, and Colts, who's the most impressive 3-0 team?
The Colts. Yeah, I would say the Colts. I got a chance to see them, a lot of them on Sunday,
yeah,
because I called that game Colts-Titans. You know, and I know the Dolphins and the Titans aren't very good, but, I mean, they beat both those teams by 25 points. Like, that is super, super hard to do in the NFL, as you guys know. I mean, think about how good the Chiefs have been in recent years. Not many times they've been blowing teams out like that. And, you know, think even like the Titans had the lead late in the third quarter in Denver against the Broncos, you know, against the Rams, the two teams that made the playoffs last year. That game against the Colts was never close. I mean, that, you know, they were losing by two scores at least pretty much the whole game. So it just speaks to the Colts. Now, I don't think that they're great on defense. I think they're probably just okay. But offensively, man, I mean, their O-line's playing awesome. Jonathan Taylor is the best running back in football right now. You know, Tyler Warren is like a top five tight end. And I think because of that, it helps their other receivers, Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce. You know, those guys have always been good players, maybe not great players, but because of all the focus on Taylor and Warren, it's like those guys are getting even more attention. And, you know, I think Steichen's just so happy their head coach to have a quarterback that just runs the offense, that just knows what to do, runs the offense to the point where, you know, Daniel Jones is operating at a very, very high level right now.
Generally speaking about offenses, what do you think's going on there again in the league? Because, like, the Chiefs don't look good. They're missing a lot of their weapons, so maybe that's part of it. But, like, even your Philadelphia Eagles, that's not a fun offense to watch either. Yards per game are down. Is this just the defenses are caught up? We need to wait a month. It just seems like, in general, offense has not been that enjoyable around the NFL.
Well, you're 1,000% correct, although I will say, like, if you watch the Ravens-Lions on Monday night,
yeah,
you know, those offenses are still pretty awesome. And there's other teams as well. But I think it's a couple things. You know, they finally figured out a couple years ago that you really are only going to get really shredded if you're giving up explosive plays. So almost everybody is playing, you know, some form of what they call shell coverage with two deep safeties or cover four or whatever, where they really are not going to let you get passes over 20 yards. It's going to be very difficult to do that. And so what you have to do is be super patient and move the ball down the field, you know, taking the underneath stuff. The problem with that is, I think especially the first month of the season, since these guys don't play in the preseason at all, they're going to make a mistake. You know, there's going to be a penalty, a motion or illegal shift or a hold, or it really is hard to go 10 plus play drives, which is what they're now forcing you to do. So they're forcing you to go the long way, which a lot of teams aren't capable of doing. And then even if you are and you get down there, a lot of times they're doing a better job of making you settle for field goals. And so it's hard. It's really hard.
We're talking to our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, here on 96.5 The Fan. What did you make of the Chiefs' performance? An ugly, ugly first half, obviously. And then that opening drive to start the second half, they kind of settled in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I thought of it was they finally at least got something going. And I think probably that maybe the best thing is that, you know, this Thornton guy looks like a real guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of just in the nick of time where they need him. And I don't know when Worthy's coming back, maybe this week or whatever. And we know there's still a few weeks before Rashee Rice, but very valuable that Thornton actually looks like a player for them because they desperately need that to open up the stuff for Kelce and Pacheco and those guys underneath a little bit more.
When you look at what the Chiefs are doing, like, we asked the question to ourselves, Do you think it's still fair to say, hey, let's make a judgment on the Chiefs offense until Worthy and Rice come back? Or are they looking, struggling enough that that's a hard sentence to keep selling?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I think it's a combination of what I said about the first month of the season. Although, interestingly, as you know, the Chiefs actually play their starters more than almost every other team these days, which is wild. You know, like, because you think about it, think of all teams, do the Chiefs only need to play in the preseason? It's the same guys in the same system this entire time, but yet they do. So you would think that they would be further ahead from that standpoint. But I do think every team, there's an ebb and flow with every team every season. You know, if you remember, the Eagles were 2-2 after week 4 last year and had lost to the Bucs by 3 scores. Well, guys, they haven't lost a game that Jalen Hurts has finished since then. I mean, it's 20 games. It's a full year. They have not lost the game that Hurts finished since then. They've only lost one period. It was the Commanders game where he got hurt in the first quarter. All of which is to say, the concussion, you know, the first month really means very, very little for how we feel about these teams at the end of the year. I really do think a lot of these times these teams are just trying to figure it out in the first month. And then, you know, what you start to see the progress month 2, 3, and 4. I think that'll naturally be the case with the Chiefs. And then obviously getting Worthy and Price should have a big impact on it.
You mentioned the Ravens a minute or so ago, and obviously that offense has been great despite a 1-2 start. The Chiefs are also 1-2, but it feels like the way everybody talks about the Chiefs is so much different than the Ravens. You know, why do you think that is? Is it because everybody loves offense and points? Like, the Ravens' defense, of course, has been a problem. The Chiefs' offense has been a problem, but their defenses look good. Why do you feel like people discuss the Ravens as if everything's going to be all right, but with the Chiefs, there's way more concern?
That's a great question. I do think it's because they see the Ravens still scoring 30 points in those losses and having, you know, unfortunate, let's call them Derrick Henry fumbles. But it's like the Chiefs don't get credit for how well their defense is played for whatever reason. I think the Ravens are better than the Chiefs. I think the Ravens are a really, really good team, but you are what your record says you are. You know, I don't care about like the yards per play stats and all these metrics. The Ravens are always so great in all these metrics, and then they lose the games they need to win.
Right. Yeah.
Which is ultimately all that matters. Like, is anybody taking the Ravens over the Chiefs in a playoff game? I don't think so. I don't think anybody's taking the Ravens over the Bills in a playoff game. I don't have a great explanation for it, because I feel like they have the talent and the personnel and the coaching and all that to do it, but they don't. They have some real issues on defense right now in Baltimore. They have too many good players to be this bad on defense. And so I don't know if they make a coaching change or what happens, but they got to figure that out.
The biggest storyline that came out not involving the Chiefs out of that game was that Jackson Dart is going to make his debut for the New York Giants. Are you surprised they made the shift this early, or is it just after Russell Wilson put 3 into the seats, they didn't really have much of a choice there at the end of the game?
Well, I guess they had a choice. You know, it's funny because the way I look at it is it's really just the head coach and the GM trying to figure out the best way to save their job.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I think initially it was, hey, we should have a pretty good defense. If Russell Wilson plays like he did in Pittsburgh, maybe we can go 500, right? And if that doesn't go well, then we could put Jackson Dart in. I think they wanted to try to give the Russell Wilson thing as much of a chance as they could, because I think they know with Jackson Dart, they're probably not going to be 500. You know, they're probably not going to make the playoffs or have a great record. The Jackson Dart thing would be more like, hey, we're showing a lot of momentum with this rookie quarterback. You don't want to mess with this. You know, we got a good thing going. I think they probably thought maybe they had a better chance to have that momentum, like if it was a 6 or 8 week thing, as opposed to a 14-week thing. You know, 14-week thing, it could be like he gets off to a good start, but then teams figure him out a little bit, and the last few weeks of the season he looks like crap and they still get fired.
I guess for me, Ross, this is part of the issue like that I don't like when people are like, oh, you know football better than the people running teams? Because this is maybe the fifth quarterback in the last two or three years that has been handled the exact same way, and I think it's the worst way to handle a quarterback, which is we keep lame duck head coach, we let him screw with young quarterback, we then in year two or three give him new offensive coordinator, new head coach, new system, force him into relearning it again, and then hope this time it's better. I don't understand why this is a trend in the NFL. Why are they allowing these coaches to screw with the young quarterbacks?
Yeah, well, I think you got to take it on a case-by-case basis. I would agree with you with the Giants. I thought that was a really poor decision. That they also, by the way, didn't know when and where they would draft a quarterback, right? You know, it's the other teams that have the higher picks that's more interesting, like the Titans at number one. But I don't know. I mean, you hire Brian Callahan, and his quarterback last year was Will Levis. I don't think anybody actually thinks that Levis is a good quarterback. So then the point would be, well, let's give Cam Ward a chance. You know, let's give this guy a chance with a legit quarterback. And that quarterback is Cam Ward. And, you know, Callahan was there with Burrow in Cincinnati and blah, blah, blah. And maybe they will turn it around. But that's the logic, I think, with a coach like Callahan or a situation like Tennessee. I don't understand the Giants decision. I never did.
So that was Ross Tucker with us a little bit earlier today on the show. Our insider calls with Ross Tucker are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side.
It is interesting because he's not like way down on where the Chiefs are necessarily, but he also thinks the Ravens are way better, but that's a preseason. Yeah. That whole thing is a preseason perception. Because preseason, people thought the Ravens were better. They're both 1-2. One team scores, one team doesn't score. I wouldn't be surprised if you pulled 100 NFL analysts, if 80 said they thought the Ravens were a better NFL team.
And by the way, I get that. Like, I get it, but that's why I asked the question to him how people view each of these teams. And he admitted, and I think it really is a simple answer, you see one team that can seemingly score whenever they want, and so they must be better. That's the mindset we have in when we watch sporting events. And yet, that's not the full story, obviously, but that's what it is. If the roles were reversed, unless it's just, you think there's like some true anti-Chiefs thing going on still here to start this season. Otherwise, it's the same thing. If the Chiefs were scoring and the Ravens weren't, but their defense was great, people say, oh, the Chiefs are way better. It's because it's what people want is scoring. But it's also why I think the Chiefs have a chance to win on Sunday for sure. And that's because their defense to me is going to cause us to be a little bit lower scoring game. And so hopefully to neutralize a little bit of that Ravens offense. Yeah. If the Chiefs have to get in the 35 point game, they're going to lose. I don't think the Chiefs are winning 35-31. Their offense is not capable of that right now.
I'd be impressed if that was the case. Now I will say tomorrow, I'm going to bring some stats to the show. I know we try to avoid too stat heavy.
Yeah.
These are simple stats that will point out one simple thing. The Chiefs' offense is a lot closer to the Ravens' offense than the Ravens' defense is to the Chiefs. So, like, you're talking about, like, a separation of where teams are. The Chiefs' offense is a whole hell of a lot closer to being what the Ravens are on offense than the Ravens' defense is to being what Kansas City's is. And so, as we get later in this week and we start trying to figure out how exactly we're going to see this game's going to play, and we'll talk to Matt Verderam tomorrow more about some game-specific stuff and then maybe a couple of other things going on in the league. There and like we're expecting to talk to Alex Smith later in the week as well. We'll find ways to see where they see the offenses and the problems are and if they are solvable. Yeah.
Derrick Henry, fumbling problem. Also, I saw some numbers coming across today that he is the second rated back in terms of stuff percentage. It's not a good thing. 63.4% of his carries are stuffs. Yeah. Less than 4 yards on first down or less than 3 on any other down.
Unlike Cole Reagans, he leads the league in stuff percentage.
Good stuff. That's the good stuff. All right. Hope you guys have a good rest of your Wednesday. Tomorrow on the show, Matt Verderam is going to join us. We'll also have Danan Hughes hop on the show, get a perspective from him on the wide receivers. Paul Charchian will get a set for fantasy football as well. The Drive with CDOT and Rob up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.